welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Hi, Johnny. Welcome to Soccer Coaching Podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Definitely my pleasure. Appreciate you giving up your time. As everyone is, I know you're very busy, so thank you for this. But I think it's going to be great to get your thoughts and ideas and experiences around like really trying to create just a great training and playing environment for players, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, sounds great. I think any value that I can add to any coaches and any children out there, my pleasure.
Top man. Brilliant. Well, where are you?
So currently at the Football Fun Factory offices. Well, as we know them, the Football Fun Factory farm. The offices are just situated on a farm. But yeah, the FFF HQ.
Why wouldn't it be a farm? Hey, with the way you guys go about things, I'm not surprised at all. It's brilliant. There's always a quirky angle to the things you do. So
that's it. Always a bit different.
What part of the country?
So we're just in Cambridgeshire at the moment. Okay. So our offices are just outside Cambridgeshire, but the Football Fun Factory is sort of set up all over the UK at the moment, which is obviously really exciting. But HQ is down in Cambridgeshire where it all started.
Oh, excellent. Well, look, I mean, the conversation today is going to be around kind of all the wonderful stuff you guys do at the Football Fun Factory and kind of the background to that and stuff. But it's really positioned around, you know, creating great training environment, which I know is fundamental to what you do. But before we get into that, really, if you don't mind, a bit about just your background first, kind of your coaching journey, what it is you've done up to now and what your current role is.
Yeah, great question. So I'm currently the co-founder of the Football Fun Factory, and I'm sure I'll go into a bit more detail about the FFF throughout the podcast. My background, I've been coaching pretty much my whole entire life. When I was at school, and I was obviously heavily involved in playing football, and a huge passion of mine was football, quickly realised that probably wasn't quite good enough to go and play at the highest level, but was desperate to stay involved in the game. So during school, I started to volunteer at local grassroots clubs, get involved with opportunities that my school at the time had to offer. As time sort of progressed, I then ended up working at Cambridge United Football Club and did pretty much every role you can think of at the club. As a lot of people no doubt resonate, if they work at a professional football club, you end up doing pretty much everything there is. But ended up, just before I left, I was the foundation phase lead at the club. I was really fortunate that the club sort of took me through and saw me through some fantastic qualifications. I've been attending some fantastic courses that the FA have put on, including my UEFA licence. My favourite has definitely got to be the Advanced Youth Award that I did, which I don't even think they're doing anymore, but was a really fantastic course that I thoroughly enjoyed, which was specific to the foundation phase and working with those younger age groups. And that then sort of leads me now into my role at the Football Fun Factory. So I came on board as the co-founder back in September 2019. My role at the time was to be a head coach. A colleague and business partner, James Cutting, set it up, founded the organisation, proved that there was a huge appetite for football in the local area. We worked together for a number of years at Cambridge United, got in touch. I was watching closely to see what he was doing and really interested in it, gave me a call, and to be honest, I couldn't not get involved. So I left Academy Football, moved over to the Football Fun Factory, was a head coach for obviously 18 months to 2 years of in and out of lockdown and everything else. And now, unfortunately, I've stepped away from the day-to-day coaching, but still very, very heavily involved. And I lead on the delivery of our programmes across the whole network of our head coaching and franchisees across the UK.
So with the Football Fun Factory then, obviously, we'll come back to the setup time. So 2019 would have been, I imagine, a great first 3 or 4 months, then things kind of changed, right? Quite drastically. But let's come back to that in a bit. Just the philosophy then and the background to it, for those that aren't aware of, you know, what's your purpose? What's your kind of vision, if you like? And how do you differ maybe from everything else that's out there? Because it's a very busy place, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think as the name suggests, the Football Fun Factory, we are all about making football fun. We've got a real passion for creating experiences for children that create these lifelong memories and positive memories of football, developing a lifelong love for the game. We're passionate about eliminating barriers to opportunity. Our programs are accessible for children as young as 2 years old in our TOTS program. all the way through to 12 years old. And the main focus that we've got, well, three main priorities. They are safety, fun, and development. And we prioritize them in that order. Yeah, eliminating barriers to opportunity, using football as a vehicle for child development to try and teach life skills in these young children that we coach.
With regards to two-year-olds, I'm intrigued. How does that work? I mean, I struggle. I've had under fives of that before, and that's hard work. How does it work with the little ones?
Yeah, so it's probably the hardest program that I've ever delivered on, but also probably the best program that I've ever delivered on. So at the Football Fun Factory, we've got three football inflatables. So we've got an inflatable goal, which is a cross between a goal and a bouncy castle, which the coaches often get to the sessions early, set it up and have a go on it before the kids arrive.
I can imagine. Yeah.
We then got a huge 3 metre tall dartboard. The ball makes an almighty thud when you smack it against. And then we've got an inflatable football pitch, which is roughly the same size as just over the size of a badminton court. So our TOTS program, which is for children aged 2 to 5 years old, that takes place inside the inflatable football pitch. So one, it's like they walk in, it's almost like walking into Wembley Stadium. They see this inflatable football pitch set up and they obviously then go inside that and have a kick around. The best thing about that for a coach is the kids are almost penned in so they can't run off. The parents are heavily involved in that session as well. And it's sort of an experience for both child and parent where it's their first taste of football. And it's just loads of play, loads of sort of unstructured play, loads of little mini games and stuff and challenges that we set the children. But yeah, it's a whole load of fun, that's for sure.
And you stop at under 12s, do you?
Yeah, so at the moment we're desperate to be able to offer experiences for children above the age of 12. However, as people probably listening will know, at 12, 13, 14 years old, other things come into play, whether that be their mates, girls, the phone, Call of Duty, Fortnite, whatever it may be. So it changes slightly. So at the moment, we do go up until under 12, just because that's where we sort of see a natural drop off anyway in our programmes. But in the future, we'd definitely love to be able to extend those age groups beyond that age.
Just to get it right in my head, because I've seen things you've done and I follow what you do and it looks fantastic. And I could have this completely wrong, but I get a sense that it is about participation, about fun, which is fantastic. But working in the grassroots space as I do, you see a sharper end of that. You see a very much kind of like academy driven, parents chasing a dream potentially, that kind of stuff. Are you a million miles away from that, or is there some crossover in the sense of maybe the parents and players that come to the Football Fun Factory, or is it literally chalk and cheese?
To be honest, it is quite chalk and cheese. The from my background and from James's background, who worked in professional football, and Luke Chadwick, who some of the people listening might know, obviously used to play for Man United and about 50 million other clubs as well, as he sort of dotted around different leagues and different clubs. We've all come from a high-pressure academy football environment where, unfortunately, it's a little bit of the nature of the beast. Like there is a goal in academy football to get that one or two players through at the end. And as everyone know listening, the percentages a few years it came out, it was 0.012% of children that play football in the UK go on to become a Premier League professional. So with the numbers so small, we actually sort of fell out of love of that environment, really. And we were seeing children come to the academy sessions. And it was for the children of 9 years old, it almost became a job and was their identity. They were an academy footballer. And hopefully everyone listening will know that life's far more important than just football. Although it does, I sleep, eat and breathe it, and it's a huge part of my life. At the end of the day, like, these kids are kids and they need to experience all the things that come with being a kid. So that's sort of where the Football Fun Factory was born, really. Although there is some great work that goes on in academy football, unfortunately, we sort of just wanted to put smiles back on faces. When Luke ever talks, and I'd recommend anyone checking him out on socials, but whenever he talks about his early experiences, I mean, he went on to go and play with David Beckham under Sir Alex Ferguson. But when he talks about his early experiences and childhood experiences, he doesn't remember any technical or tactical information that the coach taught him at under nine. He just remembers having fun and falling in love with the game. And that's sort of what we've tried to do. Go back to basics, go back to creating an environment where kids just love coming to.
And would your players be with you and maybe a club as well or a team? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so we've got probably a 50-50 split, really. There's some children that don't take part in grassroots football and come to just our sessions as a sort of an introduction. It's their first taste of football. We've also got a lot of children that play for grassroots club and our training sort of supplements that. We've even got a few children, some of my sessions when I first started, had a few young lads that came out of academy football and joined my sessions. So we've got a real mix of participation and ability within those sessions. And that's sort of, I guess, one of the niches that our coaches have and their ability to, I guess, coach a real mixed ability and ages within the groups. But yeah, a real variety of ability that come to our sessions.
And would you stream the groups then on that basis, Johnny? I like if you've got, say, 20 under 10s there, did a coach look and think, well, we might put these five against each other? Or is it kind of done more subtly? Or is it literally like, no, actually, we've got a stronger team and not so strong a team? Or is it just you kind of work with what you've got and blend it in a little bit?
Yeah, so the way we do it, our participation numbers across our programs are really high. I mean, one of the head coaches, Dave, is literally just 5 minutes down the road. At one session, this is hard to believe, but he's got 70 children that attend in the 1 hour session.
Dave's a bonus, Johnny.
Yeah.
Their children. 70.
Yeah. It's an amazing environment for the kids.
That's testimony to him though, right? He's doing something right there.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, that's a common theme across all of our head coaches. And they obviously run their own business, and the way that we've got the business model, like participation is incredibly high across all of our programs. And I think what we tend to do, and because our offering for our evening sessions is for children aged 5 to 12, a lot of parents can bring both son and daughter, 5-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter to the same session at the same time. They don't have to take one to swim in 10 minutes down the road. And that's sort of a big part of our program. Obviously, when the children then arrive, they're then split into age and ability appropriate groups. And that may change, and there's sort of fluidity around that from week to week, depending on the numbers and the children that arrive and everything else and maybe what we're working on. But it's interesting. It's good fun. Yeah,
definitely. Brilliant. Well, a bit of background. So obviously 2019, September, you set up, it's all great and going wonderful, I'm sure. The drama's anything like it goes. And then suddenly, obviously, we get a global pandemic kick in. So just a bit about that journey then. Like, how's it been over the last 2 or 3 years, and kind of how has the Football Fun Factory kind of grown and developed?
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know, we are a franchise organisation. So James first set it up just alongside another job that he was doing, and participation in his local community and area went through the roof. And everyone kept saying, oh, you should franchise this. And he was never really sure. That was never his intentions. But when so many people say something, you sort of have to take stock and listen, really. So he got in touch with me, went for a coffee with him, and within 3 minutes I was sold on the idea, because we could make mass impact on a huge scale. And our goal is to become the world's leading children's football coaching organisation. And that's not said with any arrogance, but that's what we want to try and do. And we truly believe that the programmes that we offer, there's no reason why we can't. So the plan was for me to pilot it for a year, prove that it wasn't a one-hit wonder where James lived. This sounds a bit crazy, really. Within 2 weeks of sort of announcing that I was leaving academy football in quite a sought-after role within academy football that thousands of people apply for all year round and stuff, it turned a few heads, I guess, in the local area, just because we've been in youth football in this area for such a while. And within 2 weeks, the goal or the plan was for me to pilot it for a year. It turned out that a few people were interested, and then we had 5 franchisees after just a couple of weeks. So that changed the landscape. We all got off to a flying start, started really well. Obviously, a couple of months later, hit lockdown, and the first lockdown. But we have a saying at the Football Fun Factory, every challenge is an opportunity. So within that period and that first lockdown in particular, we probably did 3 years worth of work and documentation in 3 months. And we just went hell for leather, and we just went for it. We came out of that first lockdown and actually recruited more head coaches and franchisees. I think a lot of people evaluated their life during that, wanted to do something they loved doing. So we actually were a team of 10 coming out of that lockdown. Fast forward, obviously, a couple of years now, we've got 56 franchisees across the across England, Scotland, and Wales. We've just done a we've got a national partnership with Centre Parks. We're their football provider for their programs across all six of their sites, including in Ireland. So the plan to go slow and for me to pilot it for a year went out the window, really, and it's just gone bananas, really. But yeah, it's great.
It's a good point you made, Johnny, about like however much there would have been challenges, obviously, due to COVID. I think a lot of people did reflect, didn't they, on what they were doing and stuff, particularly, I think, coaches, you know, and what they're up to. And you kind of got a real sense of that. So I can see how that might have played out, you know, in some ways to support what you've done and people thinking, actually, maybe I could be part of this because it seems more suited to what I think football should be about.
Yeah, definitely. I think for everyone during that period, I mean, it was obviously a horrible time for everyone across the whole world. But I think it does make people stop, think, and actually those that going back to a job and when they come back off the lockdown period and going into a job that they just don't enjoy, it makes you think, well, life's too short for stuff like that. And actually, you might as well grab the opportunity and grab life by the horn sort of thing and enjoy it. So, during that time, we did see a huge increase in sort of the head coaches that were interested in the opportunity. But, it's obviously worked out well for us to date.
Okay, so if you don't mind then, just from your perspective of things, what do you think constitutes a great training environment? Because we can all have our own version of that, can't we? You know, we can say a great training environment is, but for you, what is a great training environment? What would that like in practice?
100%. I think there's almost no wrong or right to this question. And that's the one thing about football that I love more than anything is everyone's got their own opinion, which makes the football in general such a fantastic sport. My opinion of a brilliant environment, I mean, if anyone sees me coach, they'll know I'm double lively, to say the least. Full of energy, full of rubbish jokes, rubbish one-liners, but running around and having just as much fun as the kids. So I think that for me, I think as a coach, you have to be a role model. You have to role model what you want to try and get out in the environment. For me, fun is a huge part of that, making the environment that the kids absolutely love turning up to. I talk a lot on social media about winning for me isn't 3-0. Winning for me is children wanting to come back next week. Winning for me is children at the age of 16, 17, 18 as adults still playing football when they started at 6 years old. It's developing these life skills in the children. So that's what I try and do within all my sessions is create an environment where children just love coming back to. Because as everyone knows, if you're having fun, you're going to learn and you're going to develop and you're going to want to play more. And ultimately, that is what improves a child's performance with regards to the footballing side of things. So that's definitely top of my list. I think the other thing from my background in academy football as well is variety. I think variety is key. During academy football, we used to have these pie charts and I was quite techie on the old computer and I got everything going. But we used to like grade the games depending on how the children found it, both physically, technically, like, and how much success they experienced in the different formats. And we'd try and hit different formats that they played in matches, whether it be 5v5s, even 3v3s or 7v7s, 9v9s. We also then did and tried to make sure they had a real mix of difficulty in their matches. So you'd colour code some games as red, amber and green, depending on what success they get, but trying to give a real variety of the amount of success they have. So you can then teach those valuable life skills that go with it, winning and losing, being humble and gracious and those types of things as well. So I think for me, fun, variety. And the last thing I'd say is probably around getting to know the children and the families that you're working with. Academy football, there is sometimes a stigma around us and them, and the parents are further away. And even in grassroots football, sometimes it's almost like a competition between or enemies between the parents and the coach. Whereas I think the closer you bring them to the action, and they know the children better than anyone. So the more you get to know the families, the parents, the children, the better experience you can provide for their child and for the kids that you're coaching.
Can't go wrong with that, can you? Fun, variety, and know the players. I think, yeah, it's three top tips there straight away. And what does a typical session look like then? And would it be consistent throughout? Because obviously you get your head coach in, right? And I guess they come with their own personalities, their own style and things like that. So how much do you kind of, I'm not saying police it, but how much is there a formula, a Football Fun Factory formula to kind of the sessions? And how much is it like, as long as you're ticking maybe some the key boxes around fun and safety and development, you know, you let them do their own thing?
So within franchising, there's a almost like a winning formula to everything. We've got a winning formula to the business model that we've created. We've got support with regards to the marketing side of things. And it's exactly the same with the delivery side of things and the coaching aspect. We've got 150 session plans across all of our different programs. So 150 for Football Fun Development, which is for children aged 5 to 12. We've then got the same for our TOTS program for 2 to 5. And then same for our Football Fun camps that we deliver during the school holidays. So they've got all of these session plans to pick from. We don't say you have to pick this one because every group will be different, but there's so much choice in there to be able to pick the right ones for the children that you're coaching, because that will vary depending on the age of your group, depending where you are in the country, what the weather's like, all these variables that obviously as coaches we know about. The one sort of, I guess, sort of strict formula that they must follow is we operate in arrival matches. So when the children arrive, first thing they do, the bibs are all set out, pitches are set out, they run in, grab a bib and start playing. Because one, everybody loves matches. Everyone wants to play matches. The best thing about football. Two, what we find also is the children, and this is sort of a top tip for anyone listening, is the children will tend to get to the session earlier when they know that they kick off with matches, because that's their favourite bit. So if you play with arrival matches, you tend to get the kids, the pester power of children to parents, oh, can we get there early so I can play more match time? And you'll find that the children start to get there earlier and earlier. So we always have that set routine as they come in. They meet and greet the coach. They put their water bottle down in a safety circle that we've got out. They run and then start playing matches. We then go session game, session game. Any coaches listening, I guarantee if they got a pound for every time a child said, are we going to play a match? Can we play a match? When's it match time? They'd be millionaires. So what we do in all of our sessions is we have loads and loads of game time. That's where we can put into practice the stuff that we've been doing in the session into the game. And ultimately, we try and let the game be the teacher as much as possible. So there'll always be small-sided games, no more than 6v6s, but tends to be smaller than that across lots of different pitches, loads of different pitches, playing at the same time and playing football. That's what they come to training for. So that's with regards to the formula and how we sort of, I guess, set the formula that they operate. So it's always pre-arrival matches, session game, session game.
Is there a syllabus? Would you kind of work on a theme each week then? Does it build on things? Or again, is that kind of just a bit bespoke and depends on the group?
Yeah, very bespoke. I think that we have a screening process for any head coach coming in. As a franchise, we try and eliminate barriers for the children. We try and eliminate barriers for the coaches. A lot of franchises have got a really hefty front fee that's really expensive and actually turns a lot of people off. Whereas we've literally stripped our fee right back and has made it as affordable as possible for what the coaches then get. And they don't pay any more than they need to for all the equipment that they get in their package. And I think that's one thing that we're really proud of. With that, we then have the ability, and to be honest, we could have scaled a lot quicker. We could have more head coaches across the UK than the 56 that we've currently got. But what that does by having such a low barrier to entry, it gives us the ability to really pick the best coaches and the best people that match what we're trying to create at the Football Fun Factory. So as much as we've said yes to 56 people, we've said we never say no, and it's always a not yet. And we try and put them on a development plan and offer them support to become nearer to what we're looking for. But all the coaches that we've got on board at the moment within the FFF, we call them superstar head coaches. They are incredible. They're such fantastic role models at engaging and inspiring the children. So we're really lucky that they've got a real passion for coaching, a real passion for youth football. And with the syllabus, well, it's more session plans than a syllabus. They don't have to stick to a set routine every week, and they've got flexibility around that so they can cherry pick what's right for their group. And because we're always adding to the session every couple of months, I'll chuck a few more sessions that I'll brainstorm and put together and put those in that session plan pack for them. They sort of never run out of ideas.
And would players sign up for like a block at a time? Is it like just rolling weeks? Is it like, you know, is there a set block that you might work through and start again? Or is it just you keep going until you've had enough, or hopefully it's all the under 12s?
Yeah, so all the children within our programme, they sign up to a monthly direct debit, which entitles them to obviously attend all the sessions that go on throughout that month. To be honest, if children leave our programme, they often then go on to other things, but maybe at a professional club, maybe at a grassroots club, maybe beavers or swimming or something else. But for us, although we are a business and the head coaches are a business, to be honest, it's great if children, I know it sounds sort of counterintuitive, it's great when children leave, because obviously not if they're not enjoying it, and that's when we hate to see children leave. But actually, if they're going on to play somewhere else or do something else or another sport they love, then brilliant. We just, while they're in our sessions, we just want to make sure they fall in love with the game and develop that long-lasting love for the game. So, they sign up to a monthly direct debit. And like I said, that sort of helps see participation go through the roof for our head coaches and franchisees.
And as I understand it, there's not a games program, is there? So you don't play matches, which I guess, am I right in that first? Isn't there's not matches?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't play matches.
So I guess there's two things there. I guess it takes a little pressure off the coaches because you haven't got, as silly as it sounds, you haven't got to think about winning and losing games at the weekend. But also it doesn't then tread on the toes of the grassroots clubs, does it, either? So I guess there's no conflict of interest there.
Yeah, so we try and work in partnership with grassroots clubs. I think a lot of organisations, I say similar to us, there's nothing really quite like what we do, but a lot of organisations and grassroots, there is that little bit of tension and conflict between that. Competing for children and stuff, we're so opposite to that. We just want to supplement what the fantastic work that goes on within grassroots football up and down the country and add to the experience that the children have. I think for us, we always try and build relationships. When I first started as a head coach, I went out and did loads of sessions at loads of local clubs and stuff to just try and add value and spread the word of the Football Fun Factory. So yeah, there's no competition with regards to the matches on the weekend. It definitely makes it easier, as you touched on, because, and I think that's where one of the questions you asked earlier about the parents and the types of parents that we get, they really buy into the ethos that we have at the Football Fun Factory, because there is no game, there's no sort of tension around match minutes and favouritism or anything like that. So it makes it easier to manage for the head coach. And actually, our parents across all of the programs are absolutely amazing. They're really supportive. They really buy into the ethos. We have something called a word of the week, where it can be anything like humility. It might be trust. It might be being kind. And those types of life skills that we really try and teach in the children that we coach. And the parents really buy into that as well. And they're great at helping the children with that and use that actually as a bit of a benchmark throughout the whole week, because it's related to their Football Fun Factory session that's on Friday. They find it out on Monday. So then they're always leading up to it. And there's one thing that's unique to our programme is obviously traditionally in football, you have red and yellow cards. At the Football Fun Factory, we brand colour everything. Everything's blue, white and yellow. But we've got something called a blue card. And traditionally in football, red and yellow cards are obviously given out for bad things. At the FFF, the blue card is given out for good things. And that isn't the best trick. That isn't player of the match, the best goal that's scored. It's for someone that demonstrates fantastic life skills, that demonstrates all the behaviours that we're trying to promote within the children that we coach. And what that does, it's definitely not a behaviour management technique, but it does just create this environment where children are all so kind, so helpful, such great listeners. And actually, the environment that and the blue card that adds to the environment just creates this sort of bliss for a coach, really. With you've got 70 really polite, kind children running around having a great time, it becomes quite easy to manage and really fun for the coach as well.
Well, you make so many good points there, because I see it quite a lot where, you know, coaches are struggling with a group of players for whatever reason. And I think it's the environment that's been created, and they're not bad coaches. And I see it in education with teachers as well. You know, there's some really good teachers out there, but they sometimes struggle with the classroom because the environment's not quite right. And if you focus on getting the environment right, suddenly the coaching can come out. It's so much easier, isn't it? It's not a chore anymore. It becomes a pleasure to coach because the kids are doing what you need to do to be able to get the information across. And it's a great, I mean, the word of the week, the blue card things, are fantastic tools, I'm sure, for doing that. Also with the parents thing, it's interesting because I think, again, parents, obviously, they want the best for their children. Of course they do. But when you throw games into the equation, what they seem as best for their children can sometimes get a bit blurred. So I think the minute you take that out of the mix, I can imagine that the parents are lovely because they've got not to think about game time or if little Johnny's going to, you know, score three goals at the weekend or little Susie's going to, you know, get picked or not. They can just come and enjoy it. And straight away, I guess for the players as well, when the parents are more relaxed than children enjoying the environment, then they'll enjoy it too. So I can see how the sessions must be really positive.
Yeah, the environment is everything. I think that's one thing that I tried to do when I was in academy football as well. And obviously that is a very different environment. And there is sort of pressure, external pressures, not just from parents, but from the children they put on themselves. As much as under nines, you try and release any pressure. And at Cambridge United, we try to avoid at all costs of releasing children at those younger age groups all through the foundation phase. It used to be sort of a big no-no and would only ever make that decision if it was right for the child and family and stuff like that. But like children at 9 years old, they do think that they're intelligent. It's crazy how intelligent they are. That they know that at the end of the year in academy football, there's a retain and release. And as much as you try and create an environment where there is no pressure and you put no external pressure on as a coach, it is the nature of the beast, and actually they can't get away from it at times. And I think obviously there is that challenge with matches, and there does become that competitive edge, and it's really up to the coach, I think, to create that environment and build it with the parents, get their buy-in from the get-go, put your philosophy out, put your markers out from the start, explain to the parents what you're trying to achieve, get them on board with it, and then that hopefully will make it a lot easier.
And you're obviously experts at this because, like you say, you've got 56, I think you said, like head coaches or super head coaches. So you must have interviewed a lot more than 56, obviously. And like you say, you don't take everyone on because not everyone's maybe in the right place at that moment in time, but you work with them. I think that, and we have a lot of like grassroots like trustees or chair people listen to the podcast or who run grassroots clubs. And for me, I think one of the mistakes that can happen, or maybe mistakes are not a fair word, but one of the things that might be an oversight sometimes is the coaches they recruit, volunteer coaches to run teams. What, if you got any tips or suggestions around maybe when you're looking to select a coach for a team, because you can still select, right? Even though it's a voluntary position, isn't, you know, you can still have a choice in who does that. And what do you look for in your coaches that kind of say, actually, you know, that's the kind of positive sign we're looking for? And maybe what might be a few red flags you might think, actually, they're not quite ready yet.
Great question. One thing that we, from my experience in academy football, you have to have your A for B license to even apply for some of the jobs that are available. That is so the opposite from what we're trying to do at the Football Fan Factory. We've got head coaches that are UEFA A qualified. We've got head coaches that are level one qualified. It's people's, in my eyes, their ability to engage and inspire children is what it's all about. I think if they have a real passion for what they're doing, a passion for the children that they're coaching and putting their needs first, for me, that is everything that we look for in a coach. There are some things that can be taught and learned, and coaches can develop their tactical knowledge and technical knowledge and session plans galore online and everywhere that you can access them. I think for me, if a coach comes in and puts smiles on the children's faces, then you should do all that you can to try and get them involved at your grassroots club, because ultimately that is all that matters. The rest of it can be learned on courses and qualifications put on by the FA and CPD events that the clubs do. So for me, yeah, any coach that comes in with a smile on their face, bit of energy and puts smiles on the children's faces at the end of the session is a huge, huge win for me.
So it's that personality more than maybe than qualifications.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think there's also no set personality. Like I said earlier on, I am all over the place. I'm skipping and jumping. I'm so energetic in my session.
It's all about coffee.
Yeah, it is. But I always remember, well, we've got so many fantastic head coaches. There's one that when he came in to do his session was so the opposite to me, quite quiet, very methodical in how he went about everything. But what he did, because he's, and this is one thing that they always say the best coaches are the best thieves. I'm really lucky that I've managed to see so many fantastic coaches. And what I try and do is just cherry pick all the best bits that I like and that add into my repertoire. So one thing that this coach did, and the head coach when he came in, He just changed his volume of his voice and his pitch of his voice so well that controlled the group. He was really quiet, but by talking really quiet to a group, suddenly they all have to listen a bit closer because they need to hear the coach. And it's such a great technique and a simple technique, but it's almost like you don't have to have a set personality, but as long as you are really passionate about inspiring these children, I think that's all that matters for me.
And would you encourage people who are looking to recruit coaches to look after teams, including volunteers, to make sure they do an observation, maybe just see a coach in action? Is that the best way of kind of seeing what you're going to get?
Yeah, so when we do it at the Football Fun Factory, it's not, we don't stand there with a clipboard, and it's not like a lot of the coaches listening would have gone on FA qualifications, and there is that pressure of there's a pass and a fail at the end. And we try and create an environment, even when the coaches have that observation, where it's a opportunity for them to see our environment and for us to see them coach as well. And I think that's one tip that I'd say to any club that is trying to recruit coaches, is as much as it needs to be a two-way process, it needs to be you seeing them coach, but also them seeing what your club's all about and what the environment and the philosophy that goes through all the age groups. And hopefully in your grassroots clubs, there is continuity between the under 18s or the under 12s all the way through to the under 9s. And there is sort of that philosophy and club philosophy. So I think that's really important. It should be and needs to be a two-way process, in my opinion.
And you've mentioned life skills, I think maybe 6, 7, 8 times, which is great to hear, because I'm not surprised at all that you've mentioned it as many times as you have, because you get that real clear philosophy of what you're trying to do, that it's not just about the football. How important is that side of the time you spend with these young players then? And how much of that is kind of, I guess, over, as in like you talk about it openly, or is it kind of more like just implanted in what you do with football?
I think it can be done in multiple ways. I think as a coach, there are always opportunities, and football and sport in general presents so many opportunities to teach these life skills in children. And ultimately, with the statistic of children playing at the highest level so small, it'd be silly not to try and teach these different skills and characteristics in the children. I mean, I always talk about my coaching. I'm not trying to coach the next best player. I'm trying to coach someone that can use the skills that I teach them in later life. If they're an accountant, if they're a banker, if they're a builder, whatever it may be, if I can help improve their life in any way possible, then that for me is what coaching is all about. And that is what I try and prioritize in my session. Of course, children will develop their football skills, and they come to a football session to obviously develop those skills as well. And I think it's just a mixture of both, and through session planning and sort of getting to know the children, as I mentioned earlier, and pairing children up and grouping children, you can get so many different outcomes from a bit of time spent before and after your session, evaluating how it's gone and thinking what you can do next week. But it may be a big topic at the start and I talk about kindness, or it might be highlighting someone's fantastic behaviour one-to-one. It might be doing it in front of the whole group. I think, once again, comes back to that word variety. That's what I try and add to my coaching as well, is the different ways I approach things and deliver things across my sessions.
Sometimes when I watch coaches, and even maybe myself, there's been times when I question whether or not you can get how easy it is to get a balance between fun and development. You know, like I can make a really fun session, but am I going to develop the players as well? And dare I say, I think some maybe of the more traditional approach coaches would also struggle with that kind of thing. Actually, you know, it's hard to get fun, right? We can have some fun, I get that, but we never got to focus on the fun's done. Now we've got to focus on getting better as players. You spoke about obviously the safety bit and the fun bit, which sounds fantastic. What about the development side then? I mean, how important is that? How do you monitor it? And is it possible? I know you're going to say yes to this question, but how do you achieve development alongside a good balance of loads of fun?
Definitely is possible. Yes. So I think there are loads and loads of different techniques that I try and use within my sessions, and the head coaches and that I've seen. I've been really fortunate to see across loads of different coaches and different environments achieve both development and fun. I mean, if you take a basic game of Fox and Farmers, everyone will know it. All the kids love it. They love playing tag games. I mean, I've done it with an under 16 scholars group and they absolutely love it. Like, it's just fun running around and playing a tag game. It brings you back to old school. But within that session, depending on the area size and everything else, you're getting so many fantastic physical outcomes that they're developing. Their acceleration, deceleration, changing speed, their awareness, checking their shoulders, seeing what's around them. And they don't know it, but at the time they're developing all these skills and these really fundamental skills for football and to improve their football skills. So that is without doubt an incredibly fun session, but they're getting loads of benefits to their footballing ability from it. And you can do that from pretty much all sessions. I think one thing that I try and do that might be a useful tip for those listening is when we talk about competition, I always try and pair the children up match them up against themselves. So I might do an activity, and rather than, because this is where the fun element can come out of it, if a child is at the bottom of the group and you've got a mixed ability group at that topic, whatever it may be, so say it's dribbling, one child struggles with that. If you set a little challenge and then you get all the children to shout out their scores, one of the children can feel really demoralized if they keep finishing bottom of the group. So what I tend to do is compete against themselves. So I'll set a challenge for 90 seconds. They'll go around, get as many touches as they can. They shout out their score. And then, right, the same challenge again. I'll give a little coaching point or a tip to help improve their skill. And then, right, can you beat your own score? And then suddenly you're creating this environment where there is friendly competition. It is trying to work at a top speed and better your own score. But actually, it is against yourself. So it's also an achievable target, an achievable and a realistic target that you set in the children, because they're competing against themselves. So I think there are loads and loads of small techniques and fun ways of creating that development side of things. But ultimately, like you hear stories all the time of people that don't go through academies and end up playing at the highest level, and they're not getting structured coaching. They're just at the park playing football. You talk about different countries and the players that come through, and like they just play on the streets and they're developing there. So it's sort of an argument. Do you need any coaching points at times? And I think you do. And there's definitely times for it. But actually, as long as kids are playing football, loving it, they will develop their skills with ball time, touches of the ball and loads of goes and variety.
Yeah, and I guess the reality is the more engaged they are, right, and more fun they have, and the harder they work, and the more they push themselves, right, and they have that sense of ownership then. Exactly. So, like, to think, actually, if you take the fun out of it, you're probably going to take out some of the engagement and the commitment to trying to get better anyway, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's one thing that we see in academy football is the best child under nine, under sevens, they, like, absolutely love it, love coming to football. It then becomes, like I said, sometimes a bit of a job for them. That becomes their identity. They fall out of love and forget why they first started playing. They don't play in the playground anymore or whatever it may be at school. And actually, because they're not doing all that and getting all those extra touches and playing in those different environments, they don't develop as quick. And yeah, it's those children that love the game. And you look at any pro footballer, I mean, bar three or four that have come out and said it's a job for them, and that is a real rarity. Everyone playing at that highest level is obsessed and loves football.
Yeah, so true. Johnny, you shared so much wonderful stuff. I'm really grateful for it. We are obviously, a lot of listeners here will be working in the grassroots space, and that, you know, they're voluntary parents usually working with their groups. You've already had a number of top tips already, but for them, any suggestions, any ideas about how they could take some of the things you guys do at the Football Fun Factory and maybe embed some of the things in their sessions to make sure the players are having a good time, they've got smiles on their faces and they're getting better?
Yeah, I do think one of the biggest things that you can do as a coach is spend time getting to know the children. I mentioned it earlier on, but like sometimes as coaches, I've been guilty of it in the past, you get frustrated when a lad turns up late to your session, and actually what you don't know is that they've had a torrid time at school. They've been in the car for an hour and a half. They've got stuck in traffic. Their mum and dad are separated and they're struggling, juggling all of that. You might even have that with bad behaviour in their group. And until you get to know all of the children and a little bit more about their background, how they get on at school and those types of things, it's really hard to then be able to deliver the best possible session. When I was at Cambridge United, there was this one lad, and he's one of most talented 12-year-olds at the time at everything that he does, but sort of struggled getting him fully engaged. And I ended up going to his school one day. I spoke to the school, went to, and obviously not everyone has the luxury of being a grassroots coach and being able to take the day off work and pop it in someone's school. Obviously I was very fortunate in the circumstances that I was in full-time football, but I went into his school and I learned so much about the child. and took so much away from what he was doing. And he was in a math lesson. He was really disengaged. And I sat next to him, asked the teacher if it was okay. And I gave him, it was doing perimeters at the time. And I was talking, pretend like you're walking around a football pitch and you're marking out. And suddenly he was just really engaged. And that, it just made me sort of approach everything in such a different light. I think when you get to know the children you're coaching, know their background, it does then give you the platform to really push them. If you need to drive them, whether it's an arm around them, whatever it may be, it really helps you create that environment for them to develop in the best way possible.
And do you have a favorite session? If you had to go and put on favorite a session this evening, like last minute, if you've got a few games or things you would turn to that are your kind of go-to favorites?
Yes. I mean, like I said earlier on, I've got 150 sessions that I've put together for the head coaches, and I've got probably another 500 in my head. So really, really tough question. I mean, one,
especially on the spot, I do appreciate that. Yeah. But, yeah. I just wonder if you have something kind of, if I had to put some cones out and a ball out now to do something last minute, what would I throw out there?
I think what I'd always definitely have within my session is a game, and I wouldn't limit. I'm not a fan of saying to the children, if you behave well, you'll get extra match or less match time and stuff like that. For me, that should be a part and parcel. You should have a game in all of your sessions, because ultimately as coaches, what we're trying to get the children to be better at is playing football in matches and in games. So I'd always feature a game within my session and multiple opportunities to play. I'm a big fan of underloads and overloads and like wave practices where you've got 2v2s and 3v3s and like loads of repetition of those types of things. So it would no doubt be a game like that, definitely with a match involved, maybe some cool scenarios that the children enjoy, and definitely throw in a good old fashioned game of something like chalk or cheese and tag games, because everyone loves those types of things as well.
What's chalk and cheese?
It's a game. I'm pretty big on social media, and Football Fun Factory is in general. I put a video out on TikTok. It's had 3.2 million views, believe it or not.
Is this joking? I'm going to have to find this video and watch it then.
Yeah, so it's a pretty simple game. You've got two ends. One's chalk, the other one's cheese, and all the children are lined up, paired up in the middle, and you shout out either chalk or cheese, and it's raced to that side. But then you can get the children giggling and laughing by shouting a few decoys like cheddar and church and things like that, and they're all twisting and turning on themselves. But it's a good one to get them all buzzing. But yeah, definitely go check it out.
There's going to be coaches all up and down on the weekend shouting out chalk, cheese and cheddar and stuff like that.
Exactly. Sounds good. Sounds fun.
Brilliant. Superb. Thank you so much. Look, a final few questions, that's okay. I really appreciate your time and sharing the wonderful work you're doing there. How do you see the Football Fun Factory kind of developing over the coming years?
Yeah, so our goal, as I mentioned earlier on, is to become the world's leading children's football coaching organisation. Like I said, that's really is no arrogance involved. And we're really humbled to know that we've got a long, long, long way to go to be able to achieve that. And to be honest, may never achieve it. But for us, we just want to put smiles on as many faces as possible through the beautiful game and the game that we love so much. So we're always on the lookout for superstar head coaches to bring football to their local community up and down the country and eventually beyond. So obviously doing the partnership with Centre Parks is a great way that we can make mass impact. They've got 1.8 million people that attend every year at their Centre Parks across them, which is obviously great. But at this point, we're just trying to make football accessible, convenient, fun for as many children as possible. And the goal is to eventually have this our sessions and our offering all over the UK and all over the world.
I guess demand is showing that you're doing some really great stuff there, because you're certainly getting the numbers in and the kids are loving it. So well done on that.
Thank you.
I can't let you go, Jordan, without asking you this question. We ask all our guests this one question. If there was one thing you could change about the world of coaching, what might that be?
I thought about this. I've obviously listened to a few of your podcasts before jumping on, and I've heard a few different answers. It's really difficult. I think for us, what we're trying to do is eliminate barriers. And I think that's the big thing that really sticks out to me. I think football is everybody's game, whether you're a boy or a girl, you just started playing, you're not very good, you're really good. It doesn't really matter. And I think My goal, if I could change one thing, and what we're trying to do with the Football Fun Factory is eliminate barriers to opportunity. I appreciate sometimes there are barriers that come up, and capacity and the amount of sort of players that can play on a weekend and those types of things are really difficult for some clubs. But I'd hate to think that any child gets told no, they're not allowed to play. So that would be one thing for me that I'm really keen and passionate on changing, that every single child, if they want to play football, they can.
And I mean this as a compliment, I hope it comes across the right way, but when you talk about barriers, I often think those are created by the adults, you know, not always intentionally, but we kind of barriers in the way. I see our own club, we kind of end up getting, trying to do the right things, but by trying to do the right things, you actually end up being primitive in what you go about. And I think at the Football Fun Factory, you guys seem to have a childish approach. And what I don't mean that in an unprofessional way, I mean in a kind of fun way. And actually by taking that approach, you kind of don't get drawn into the adult kind of stuff that can be one of the big issues, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, during my time scouting and obviously while I was at an academy and also just through love of games, seeing my nephew play and everything else, like I'd go to tournaments and you're seeing some coaches, unfortunately, like shouting stuff at 5, 6, 7-year-olds. And actually, if you're honest, they go home and they'll go and play Paw Patrol and they'll go and watch Pokemon. They're kids. And like, even at 12 years old, these are babies. They're young children.
100%.
They haven't developed all these skills that they need to form their own opinions at times and everything else. And as a coach, you're in such a powerful position. And for me, you have to use that for the greater good. And whether your team wins every weekend or they lose every weekend, if the children are coming off with a smile on their face and you're there to support them as human beings, because as I said earlier on, the percentage of children that go on to play professional football is so, so small. But the winning for me is walking around Asda and a child coming up to me who's now 18 and taller than me and got a better beard than I have coming up to me going, oh, you used to coach me. I love football. I love your sessions. That's what it should be about. So, yeah, don't forget that the kids are kids.
Even the older kids are kids, right? It's so true. Yeah. I think we do forget. I mean, I think there's two things there. I think we can underestimate how smart they are, and actually we can challenge them in some ways, but then we also kind of almost treat them too adult-like in what we expect from them with regards to performances. Joy, thank you so much. If you've been awesome, I really appreciate your time. Like I said, I know you're really busy. You're doing some, it wasn't supposed to be an advert for you guys, but like I've got no issues in chatting about what you guys do. So I know you've got great intentions. I know you do things the right way. I know players that attend the sessions that love the sessions they're at. You guys should be really proud of what you've achieved, especially during difficult times as well. And I've got no doubt you're going to be, it's only a matter of time until global domination. Blue and yellow everywhere, and the white as well. If people want to find out more about you or the Football Fun Factory, the work you're doing, what's the best way of going about that?
Yeah, so you can't miss us on social media. We are literally everywhere, but the footballfunfactory.co.uk, you can type it into Google and to Facebook, you'll find us. With regards to my profiles, I'm pretty heavy on social media, Instagram and TikTok in particular, and Twitter. If you just search Football Fun Factory, Johnny Martin, I'm sure I'll pop up. I try and give as much value on my social media channels as possible. I'll always happily speak to a coach and talk football with them. I think, if you check out my socials, you'll see lots of top tips, lots of sessions, lots of things that hopefully will be useful. But yeah, come check us out and I'd happily have a conversation with anyone about football, that's for sure.
Will you come back on in a year or so's time and tell us about what countries you've conquered and how 100%. Things have gone? Yeah.
Anytime, yeah. I'm always willing to talk football, so definitely.
Johnny, top man. Thanks so much for your time today. Best luck to you and the team. Keep up the great work and look forward to catching up again soon.
Top man. Thank you, Scott.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.